So I think I want to begin by paying homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. So it's lovely to sit with you all this evening. And I wanted to bring in that more spacious meditation practice that I gave a little instruction on earlier. Because it can be that our sense of self, our sense of self, or our experience of being someone, it can be very cramped. It can be very tight and small and cluttered and sometimes painful. So, we often work to endeavor to undo some of that clutter that's inside, some of the knots and the tangles that are inside. And there are many good tools these days that, our grandparents definitely didn't have access to do that kind of work. And it's important to not try to create a perfect sense of self. So the sense of self by its nature is dukkha. It can be okay for a while, but experiencing from a sense of separate somebody is it has the flavor of dukkha to it. So it's still, I do really value doing inner work and undoing some of those knots and patterns that we've learned from our upbringing and possibly also inherited through our ancestral lineage. And who knows, maybe through lifetimes, we don't really know. So I do value the work of undoing some of that stuff. But at a certain point, we have to just accept the sense of self, the sense of separate self is basically unsatisfactory. It's never going to be just right. It's never going to be comfortable for very long. And that's just the nature of the sense of self. So this practice of inner spaciousness, I feel, is a very important practice, and it can be done just as an experience of spaciousness, and or it can be done as an experience of cultivating the Brahma viharas, metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha, kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity in a more spacious way. So the Buddha's teaching, when he, the teaching that comes over, comes, is listed again and again in the suttas for the four Brahma viharas, is this radiant practice. It's a radiance. So it's radiating these qualities in all directions, in front of you, to the side, behind, to the other side, above, below, and in all directions, just like a sun, like a ball of light, but like a ball of these qualities. And it's not meant that we're this little tight little self that's trying to send out all of that lovely energy. It doesn't really work like that. So we have to make room inside to allow these qualities to come through, because they're not personal. They're not like, I'm doing it, I'm doing metta, I'm doing karuna. We do have to put in some effort and some intention, but really what we're A big part of what we're doing is getting out the way. Getting out the way so that these beautiful qualities can shine through. And sometimes, every now and again, it can happen that the spaciousness just wants to take space. It can be big, it can be little, but sometimes that spaciousness just wants to make itself known. And when that happens, it's like the personality is, I don't know where it goes actually, but it's not very relevant in those moments. And even if the personality or the sense of self has got some drama going on, you know, that's really intense and painful and real and needs to be attended to, it can be that that spaciousness comes in and whoop, it gives a different perspective to whatever's arising in the heart or heart and mind. And I don't hear it talked about as much as I might like to, I must say, in the Dhamma circles, because I think it's a very important piece of the work. And as we, you know, if we're always operating from a rather sort of solid and well-established sense of who I am, what I can and can't do, we remain limited to that. And I'm not, when I say that, I'm not implying, you know, we can do anything we like, you know. And if you just put your mind to it, you can be anything you want. You know, people, there is that. People put that out there in the world. But it isn't quite true. So, you know, if I wanted to become a ballerina, for example, I probably wouldn't get very far. You know, 56. A little bit heavy and not the most agile in the world. It's probably not going to happen, even if I really want it to. So it's not quite true that everything we put our mind to, we can do. But there is this place of, or this experience of presence.
I think you're muted, Aya.
I think she's frozen.
Right.
Her connection. She'll be back.
I'm not sure if she knows it.
Yeah.
I think so because she has disappeared now.
Probably too little sense of self.
Well, here she is. I'm sorry, just trying to
There
get back.
she is, yes.
That's all right. Glad you're back. But now you're muted.
I think we have a little bit of a problem with the internet here.
Yeah.
I was curious what you'd do with that. I was like, oh, they have a bit of space now. I wonder what's happening.
I'm glad
Thank you, made it back.
me too. Yeah, so setting the intention or bringing a sense of intention and investigation and possibility to there being a bit more spaciousness inside can have radical effects. So it puts the story of self into a very different perspective. And, you know, just as the Buddha says, the potential for that is limitless. So another word for the, another name or another categorization for the Brahmaviharas. So we're used to talking about the Brahmaviharas. Most people know what that is, isn't it? Nod if you know what that means. Yes, so most
Do
people are
you
familiar.
explain it a little bit?
Okay. Most people know that, what that means. So another categorization is the illimitables. So the Brahmaviharas is like the divine abidings, but the Buddha also calls them the illimitables, the those which cannot be limited. And so, you know, when we experience those in the heart and mind, what it's saying is that the experience of that can be limitless, can go on limitlessly. So the mind can experience limitlessness, the citta, the mind heart. That is possible. And it can be that that's experienced through the those heart qualities. And it can be just through a sense of awareness, simple awareness. It's just clear and open, and it doesn't have limits. Or it might be that we perceive it with limits at first, because it's more comfortable, because we're more familiar with limits. But then, if we invite the question, even, you know, what would it be like if, what, where is the limit of that? Where is the limit of the mind right now? If you just let the mind open, heart mind open, where is the limit? And it might be that we experience a limit, if it feels like there's a limit. But all those limits that we experience are temporary. So the practice can, you know, guide us towards getting to know more spaciousness inside. And that spaciousness, sometimes when we bring awareness to that, sometimes some of those old patterns suddenly start to undo, and it can be a little disturbing. Feel like we haven't got a grip, it's all falling apart. And it can be a little messy. But the path is like that. If we're actually going to really do it, it's going to be messy sometimes, because there's some undoing that needs to happen. So that can happen when we bring this sense of spacious awareness, that they're like, whoa, you know, things start to unravel a bit. But, you know, the body is always here and always now. We can always come back to the body, and that gives us a reference point. Always come back to the feet on the ground, or the bum on the seat, or the feeling of the breath in the body, and that brings us back into a centered presence. And definitely, you know, there can be things that are, you know, our heart meets limitations. And it can be that we meet limitations just having to deal with somebody who's difficult. Or I had an experience earlier this year where I got to go and hang out with grey whales at San Ignacio Lagoon in Baja California. And they're vast, these creatures. And at one point there was a mother and baby swimming just nearby. And the baby was probably about 2 weeks old. Huge. It's about a ton. I don't know. Actually, don't know how much it is when it's born, but it's big. They're huge, and I noticed my heart couldn't make room. It was like my heart had to break in order to make room for this these beautiful, vast beings, mother and baby, little baby. I mean, huge baby, but.
Yeah, we're frozen again.
Frozen again. Yeah. There she is.
Oh, sorry about that. All right, appearing and disappearing. Yeah, so I was saying, I'm not sure how much you heard, but what I was saying was, you know, being with these vast, beautiful mother and baby whales, I just really met the limitations of my heart that I didn't know were there. And it's like, oh, I don't know if I can make room for this. It's too much. It's almost overwhelming to be with these beautiful creatures, wild animals, you know, and the mother and baby so young. And so I could feel my heart kind of I could feel that the limits of my heart, and it just sort of had to break and sort of fall apart in order to make room for these beautiful creatures. So sometimes it can happen that way too, that love opens our heart beyond our familiar limitations. And I feel it's a very important practice to, you know, to feel the limitations of our heart and to not just stay within those, whether it's through, you know, the limitations through aversion, not liking, wanting to push away, or fear, or love that's, you know, that our heart hasn't quite got capacity for yet. It's important to meet those edges and to not be limited by them. So to push the edges of those in whatever way. And when I say push the edges, that might be wrong for some people to do that it that way. So there's different ways it can be done. And one is to use the breath in meditation as a centering and a focus and as a quality that creates more space inside. And invites an expansion of the heart, heart mind. And then these four Brahmaviharas or four immeasurables are beautiful ways of both transforming the limitations of our heart and mind. The, you know, the sense of smallness or fear or anger or ill will or greed, confusion. They can transform those qualities, even if, you know, they might not like go away completely immediately. Of course, not that easy. But, you know, as we cultivate those qualities in our meditation, even in the present moment as they're being cultivated, those limiting qualities are absent. They're not both there. So those more spacious and beautiful qualities of the heart mind are taking the airspace, and the small limiting isn't taking over at that time. And then maybe we come out of meditation and it's back into that small feeling and the stories and the fear or the pain or the whatever it may be. And then we need to just meet that with patience and kindness, because it takes time, it takes care to undo those patterns. They're not to be forced or rejected. And then we can titrate in between, go into meditation and open things up and come out and feel the smallness again. And then there's the dukkha of the smallness. You kind of, you don't really want to be small, you know. It's lovely being in those expansive states. You feel that and then take care of that. And next time you go into the meditation, inviting that opening and spaciousness again, and just being patient with the titration between those two. The movement of expansion and contraction between those different states. And that is really, that movement of expansion and contraction really is movement of nature. You find it everywhere in nature. Things open and close, expand and contract. So our heart and mind does that too, as we're working on the old gnarly stuff, and as we're developing the beautiful qualities, it titrates, it expands and contracts. So not to take issue with the contraction, but to know how it is. You know, it's not what we want to live from, but maybe right now it's like this, bringing some kindness to it. patience. And then knowing that there is a possibility of experiencing a more expansive, a freer state. So I want to offer that today. And I'd like to open up the room if anyone has any comments or questions. And I don't know if you carry on recording during that the Q&A or not.
Can or we can turn it off. If what do you think, Linda?
Keep recording. It's fine.
So I would welcome any comments or questions. There may be things I've missed that the little gaps that you would be helpful to fill or questions about the practice. Or sharing.
Can I ask a question?
Yes,
Thank you.
Isabel.
Yeah, thank you, Ananda Bodhi. It's nice to see you again. So I think when you were talking, you touched on the Brahmaviharas a little bit, and I know someone was actually did say that they wanted to hear more about them. And I mean, it seems like you're reading my mind right now because I am right in the middle of kind of that experience of feeling oftentimes very high on the practice and very good, and then other times just like my sense of self gets in the way and doesn't understand anything and is confused and frustrated and irritable and all those things. And then I'm kind of like the last thing you said was to kind of just bear with it when that happens, and that's kind of like exactly what I've been doing. But so I wondered maybe you could touch on, I don't know, some tips to do that, and maybe even using the Brahmaviharas, because I do like my loving kindness practice. I think that always makes me so much more generous and open with myself and everyone else. So, anyway, any tips you can offer? And I think somebody did say that they wanted to learn more about the Brahmaviharas when it. I'm not sure if you heard them.
No, I didn't.
It was
Yeah,
some.
thank you, Isabel. Yeah, I think probably your experience is I'm imagining there are other people who can resonate with what you're saying. And in some ways, you're answering your own question. You know that what you know is that the metta practice is good, and it transforms things, and it helps, and it brings more well-being and joy and generosity. So that's a good quality to bring to your experience, and to bring it in a way that isn't trying to get rid of the smaller, confused, contracted state. Because it is a little confusing. It is confusing for the sense of self, because the sense of self is created itself in order to protect us. That's what it does. It thinks it's doing a good job. And it was once upon a time, and now often it's doing things that are not actually helpful anymore, but it's trying its absolute best, and then we're going, hang on, no, that's totally not what I want, you know, and so the sense of self is, for one thing, it's quite intimidated by the practice, because the practice, like I say, you know, the spacious awareness and the Brahmaviharas, they don't really need, certainly a spacious awareness doesn't need a sense of self. The Brahmaviharas, at some point, it also doesn't need that, so it can be a bit scary for the ego, and so it tries very hard to assert all of those good strategies it's done all those years that's helped you in the early life, and so there's this sort of conflict between where you are now, the sort of maturing of your spiritual path, and then the ego or the sense of self is sort of a bit left behind, and afraid, and trying very hard to organize things and sort it all out, and you know. So yeah, so compassion towards that is also important, and patience. You know, the Buddha praised patience so highly. He said patience is the supreme practice for burning up the obscurations of the mind and heart. because we have to be patient with, not this, because the mind, our intellect can know what's, well, how it should be, how it could be, how it would be, but we're not, but the heart's not ready yet. So we need to be patient and kind, and let the heart develop and be supported. No, you're muted.
I just repeated patience. Everything you said really resonated. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Isabel. Zoe.
Thank you so much. That was a beautiful practice for me, and more powerful than I would have anticipated. Something odd happened, and I started doing, when you said metta, I started radiating metta from my heart. And then something just kind of took over, and all of a sudden it was like different parts of my body wanted to radiate metta. And that was interesting because I had come into the sit with experiencing so much pain and discomfort in so many places. And each place that the metta went, all of a sudden there was a release, and all this pain and discomfort started to go. Which made me realize that it wasn't all physical pain in some way, that there was some other emotional component or whatever going on. But I just, it just kept going on its own and all over. I mean, my toes, every part of the body was engaged at some point in letting go. And it was just a very nice experience. I could, certainly certain parts I could feel. Like the high heart, when that, I almost felt like a radiating, a vibrational sense of that opening. But there was, it was just a really neat experience for me. So thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing that. It's just very much more detail for you. It's good. Anyone else? Yes, Helga.
It's,
Hi,
oh,
Helga.
hi.
Nice to
So
see
good.
you.
So wonderful to see you.
It's been a long time.
Pleasure. I was wondering if there are any ways to find an easy exit point when we do get caught up in that separate, in that small separate self, when we really struggle. Like I had a severe, health issue where it just felt like middle of the night, and they talked about fatal consequences, and then try to get some rest, and everyone leaves, and it's 1:30, and you have pain, and you're alone, and I caught myself struggling, and it took a while, from that clinging, wanting to hold on to something, to find that peace to let go and to lean into, and that was so helpful, but the struggle was very hard. And for me, it was being able, when you do metta practice and you extend it to people you don't know or even enemies or what you perceive as. And I realized that there are people that I don't know how to say that, I could lean into that. That there are people, that there is this loving kindness for anyone, in front and behind and radiating all over. And that's available for me, even if in that moment I have no way to send out loving kindness where I'm like, that real separate, but to find that connection. And for me, that was a turning point to stop that struggle and clinging. To give into and to feel held, and that it's okay no matter what the outcome, whether I'm surviving or not or whatever, it's not an important part. And I feel that freedom energy that helped me to get better, that was the turning point actually. So it's so important, but I wonder, I hope I next time I won't get to that point of intense struggle and more, if there's any way to set markers to be able to catch oneself when we start getting lost in that separate self. I'm not sure if they're.
Well, I mean, it's very, it's just one of, first of all, I just want to say it's very profound what you're saying, what you're sharing. You know, that, that you, because you're talking about it as kind of a life and death situation that you were able to let go into and let go of that fear and contraction. And, you know, it's like, it doesn't get more edgy than that, really. That's kind of, yeah. So I just want to really acknowledge your wisdom and your practice, you know, that, that was able to let go in such a difficult situation. And mudita also, that you experienced that freedom even in the most difficult, challenging and vulnerable situation. Yeah.
There were a lot of teachers involved, and you were one, definitely.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in terms of the pointers to the contraction, it's always dukkha. It's always dukkha, you know, where's the dukkha and where's it coming from? And if it's if we're pointing outside, then we won't find the cause. You know, if we think it's because of the illness or the person or the conditions, then we're not going to find the freedom, because we're giving our power away to something outside ourselves that we can't control. Well, we can't control a lot of things actually, but you know, when we recognize, so at some point in that situation you recognized the suffering and you couldn't stop it, but you could see it and you could understand it. And I'm not 100% sure if I understood, but I think I was hearing that you recognized that, you know, even though you couldn't send out metta for all beings, were you saying that you were recognizing that others are sending out metta?
Yeah,
you could, yes.
That it's like
good.
Like it's a substance in the world that
right.
you can
yes.
I don't know the word where you can
draw on it.
Link into.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like
yes.
Fill your tank almost. When you feel depleted, you feel like you have, there's nothing you can give, or you feel like I'm just trying to grab, and suddenly you see there is that. You know, it's not like somebody or something, it's just that. And it's a reservoir where you filled partially yourself too, you know, by when you were able to do that. And it was that was, you know, there, you know, for anyone to have, when you feel this alone and separate and there's nobody, you're like the only one ever. And
yes, well, it does feel like that sometimes. Well, it's beautiful that you remembered that, you know, and were able to touch into it. And you know, I definitely, it sort of occurred to me one day that people all over, you know, there's people practicing all over the world in different time zones, and people generate metta for all beings unconditionally. So probably somewhere in the world, somebody is generating metta right now, you know, and one can take that in, you know. So I think it is, you know, it is just remembering actually, and often it's the suffering that helps us to remember. Yeah. So who knows if that were to happen again? You know, you may not have to deal with all of the contraction, or it might come back. You know, it's a bit of a mystery, all of those things, but. The fact that you remembered and you were able to access that metta and you were able to let go at such a time is, you know, it's very, it's profound. It's very, very beautiful. Yeah. So I think you can just trust your practice. Yeah. We can't always avoid the old karma, you know, that's the contracts. But if you can, you can trust that your practice took you to where you needed to be. Thank you. It's lovely to see you, Holger. So we have a few more minutes. Well, we have 5 minutes. Do we? Should, yes, we have 5 more minutes. So if anyone else wants to bring anything up.
Do you want to take just a moment to let everybody know exactly where you are and what you're starting to do and where you are?
Yes, thank you, Vita. Lovely to see you too. So we are up in Port Townsend now in Washington State. So we're on a peninsula, we're way out there close to the Canadian border in a little town that's got quite a strong Dharma presence, interest. And we are starting, so we're just in the process of sort of starting afresh up here. So, you know, so those of you who knew me in the past, and I, Santa Chita, also in the past, that you know, we had the Aloka Vihara. We came over and we created Aloka Vihara in San Francisco first, and then in Placerville. And then I carried that on for a while during my sabbatical. I, Santa Chita, left that and started the Aloka Earth Room. And I carried on with the Aloka Vihara, with Seminary Junha was with me. Otherwise, it wouldn't have happened, actually. She was first at Anagarika and then now a seminary. It's been about 3 years, robes.
Two years.
And so we've decided to sort of close the Aloka Vihara chapter, and we're starting a new chapter as Parayana Vihara, and the name means the way to the beyond. It's a bit of a funny word in English. It sounds, people think of piranhas and various things, but it was actually Bhikkhu Bodhi's suggestion as a name, and it's a very beautiful chapter in one of the suttas, and one of the collections of suttas. It's one of the chapters that I'm very fond of, actually, since many years. So we are a little vihara. We have a 3-bedroom house up in this town on a dead end street. That's just a quiet little street that goes to a little woodland. It's like the street turns into a footpath and then becomes a street again. And we are establishing a little monastic vihara here and sharing the Dharma. So fourth Sundays is, as we used to be in Berkeley on third Sundays, and then during COVID we shifted to fourth Sundays online. So those fourth Sundays are continuing. So I offer fourth Sundays through the year. That people can join from 6 through 8. We should put our website in.
Six to eight at night?
Yeah.
That's on Zoom.
On Zoom, yeah.
Time of our Sangha.
Oh, well. So it is. And then we, you know, I also offer retreats. So we have a New Year retreat that the registration is open for now. That's in Applegate in California. Vita's attended a number of those. And I also teach other retreats around. So we're basically just sort of starting afresh, and with not a sort of afresh, but also keeping the connection. So the fourth Sunday is really, it's been going on for a long time, so that's keeping the connection with our, I always think of it like founding community, those who supported us from the beginning. And also the New Year retreat is in California, so it's accessible to the people who were around at the beginning when we first came, the first years. So it's sort of starting afresh and keeping connections, both of those things. And we still have the old website, but you can access it through alokavihara.org or parayanavihara.org. So I put that in the chat.
Yeah, made you a co-host. So if you could send out that link to your new website that to everyone now.
We actually don't have the new website. We're just starting to work on the new website. So it's the same old website, but with a new link.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, and I put it in the chat there.
Yeah, you said it just went to me.
I see.
To everyone.
I see. I thank you. Let me copy that. I see. Thanks. No, is it still
to
everyone? Oh, there we go. That's MP. There we are. Thanks. Thank you.
Anya?
Yes. Who's
I'm
that?
sorry. I don't have a camera. My name's Annika. I just wanted to
Oh.
ask, have you ever worked with anything about PTSD in terms of your space, making spaciousness around trauma, so to speak, if you
Well,
can explain.
I've worked with PTSD personally quite a lot, yes. And spaciousness around trauma, that kind of is a little bit what I was saying, that it can get a little messy because what we tend to do around trauma is to kind of lock down around it. And when you start to make space, it starts to kind of, things start to unravel. So, and it can be intense, it can be cathartic, it can be intense. Or it can be slow. It varies, but yeah, that is part of what can happen. So, I've certainly done that in my own experience. I'm not trained in, I'm not a therapist. I'm not trained in trauma therapy and so on. But I've worked on trauma myself, and I've had very good support with both therapists and people who. Have taught skills, taught to the monastics some sort of skills around trauma. So yes, it influences trauma, and like I said, it can be a little bit bumpy. But if you're willing to, well, I think a very important piece is if you've developed enough awareness, like sati, mindfulness. Presence, and you know that whatever arises will go through a process and then come to an end. Then, even really big catharses, and I've had some pretty wild ones, will be okay. And then you just watch it play out, and it can feel very scary. I mean, I went through one that was literally terrifying. I was terrified, and at the same time, there was a part that was saying, "Oh, well, that's interesting." Look at that. It's, and it's just, it's okay. Nothing, you can't, it's not going to hurt you. It's just the mind. And, it won't last. It's impermanent. So there can be, if your awareness, if your mindfulness is established, then even it might look really intense and people might be, concerned for you or whatever, but there's a knowing that's not afraid of it, that knows that it's an unfolding of something from the past, and it's like this right now, and it's not going to last forever, and it's okay. And when you come out the other side of that, you come out with more freedom.
My friend keeps telling me let go of the story. I'm not sure where she got that phrase, and I'm just like, what does that mean? But I mean
Yes. Well, when the trauma is very strong, it's difficult to let go of the story of what happened and me and it should be and it shouldn't be. That story, it loops around and we can't, it can be difficult to get out of it. And that's part of the nature of trauma. And so sometimes we need some help, somebody else to help us to listen and to receive it, to receive the story and then to make the possibility that the story, there may be another story. So I was speaking recently, I know we're about to have to finish, but it was somebody who had had this experience of a story of suffering, of difficulty, and then realized that's true, but there's also this other story of good things that happened, that, so it wasn't all bad. And I had a similar experience of going through experiencing all sorts of memories of, oh, it was so hard and why and and then sort of another side of the story playing itself out that was all of the good bits. So, the story is always limited and the narrative. And one way, one thing around letting go of the story is moving from the thoughts in your mind, the story that you're thinking and replaying, to the actual experience. What does it feel like in the body? What's going on? How does it feel? So moving from the thoughts to the feeling.